one signed to House Committee on Judiciary, May 8, 1979, 1:30 p.m. from 3:50, full committee, work session on HB 2198, HB 2773, HB 2936, HB 2438, HB 2559.
The House Committee on the Judiciary will come to order. The clerk will note those members present. The balance are excused. The first item on the agenda is House Bill 2773.
Joan?
Yeah.
Chairman, there are three bills on the agenda that refer to payments for lawyers for indigent defendants. And 2773 and 2936 have both been put into 2198. And so it was my recommendation and that of the subcommittee chaired by Representative Smith that those two bills, 2773 and 2936, be tabled. But let me warn you in advance, there's a fight, a real fight on 2198. There are parts of 2198 that we may wish to split out and put back into one of the table bills if we have to.
Okay, Representative Cohen moves that House Bill 2773 be tabled. The motion is non-debatable. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Junior?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passed. Representative Cohen now moves that House Bill 2936 be tabled. Motion is non-debatable. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Dugan?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Okay, the next bill we'll take up is House Bill 2559.
Mr. Chairman, this bill has been tabled, but Representative Frenmeyer wanted the committee to consider the possibility of using the related clause to make a minor change in the sexual abuse statute.
I think that's really slick. He's not even here and he's using somebody else's relating clause.
Well, I know. He said it at the time it was tabled. We didn't know he would be here when we scheduled it.
Okay, do you want to run us through the amendment?
Yeah. This is Representative Frommeyer's suggestion. In the sexual abuse in the second degree, which is before you, subsection B says the victim is incapable of consent by reason of being mentally defective, mentally incapacitated, or physically helpless. Representative Frommeyer would like to add being under 18 years of age. This is, I believe, at the request of the Springfield Police Department. In 163.315, a person is considered incapable of consenting to a sexual act if he is under 18 years of age or mentally defective or mentally incapacitated or physically helpless. And when you drop down to 415 subsection B, they leave out the under 18 years of age. In Lane County, some judges have been sustaining demurs to indictments that don't specifically allege 315 incapacity to consent. So that some of the Lane County judges and the Springfield Police Department and Representative Frommeyer consider that's a gap in the statute that could easily be remedied. There is a case in the Court of Appeals which indicates that being under 18 years of age is incapacity to consent, so that this might not be absolutely necessary, but that case is on appeal to the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, demurs are being sustained. And if you want to make sure that there won't be a demur, you have to plead. It's a hole in the statute that could be easily remedied, which is why Representative Frommeyer wanted it done.
Okay. Representative Cohen.
Are we then interfering in what's going on in the way of appeals? And how does that relate? I thought we had some discussion somewhere along passing this to me that we're going to
No, you cannot affect the case that where the transactional facts took place prior to the time that the law changed, otherwise you'd have an ex post facto law.
What this would do in effect would be to validate the Court of Appeals' interpretation of the law, I mean, make it clear that the Court of, that the legislature intended the statute, the statutory scheme, to do what the Court of Appeals said it did. Just make it much clearer that that's in fact what it does. It wouldn't affect the appeal to the Supreme Court.
Mr. Chairman.
First Bugis.
If it's the chair's wish to get on with this, I would vote to adopt the proposed amendments, but I sure can't stomach sub B. When it gets to pass it out, I want any action on it, and I don't understand the freezing into any kind of such a minor charge as something like that. So if you want to, get the bill amended and move it out of our way for today, I'd vote for that, but I got some real problems with the substance of the amendment.
Well, what are your problems?
Well, sexual abuse is second degree, and if you get somebody mentally incapacitated or physically helpless, to me that's a little more than that.
That's the current law.
That's
the only
law.
Change is to add under 18 years of age.
The 18 years of age is the only new language?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we now have a second degree, and that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
it.
It's all existing law. And then this is all the exculpatory portion.
What is new? Just 18 years
just
of age?
Under 18 years of age.
Right.
That's the motion you just made.
Okay.
Does that take care of your problems?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Bugis moves that House Bill 2559 be taken from the table. Is there discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Bugis? Aye.
The table.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
No.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Representative Bugis now moves the adoption of proposed amendments entitled Proposed Amendments, House Bill 2559, as distributed by staff. Is there discussion? I assume there's going to be objections, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye, with reservations.
Mason?
I'll say aye, but with extreme reservation.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes.
Now, I've got problems going any further.
Well, let's discuss it. Maybe we can resolve the problem.
What effect does the 18 years being added in B, one sub B, have in view of 2 sub A? I can't quite understand that at this point.
Mr. Chairman, is Jim Horne familiar with this?
Excuse me?
Are you familiar with this bill at all? Do you know what we're doing?
No.
Who makes you even with me?
Well, 2 deals with affirmative defenses, and it just basically says that the defendant
Is it not correct that that 1 may now constitute the elements of the crime? 1, A, and B?
That's correct. 2 deals with an affirmative defense where the victim was older than 14 and the defendant was less than 4 years older. That's the situation where you've got 2 teenagers that are fooling around.
Yeah.
That's an affirmative defense to the charge. So they aren't going to take a 16-year-old boy and put him in jail because he's involved with a 15-year-old girl, because there's less, she's under the age of consent, but she's less than 4 years younger than he is. So that's an affirmative defense that he would have to the charge if the district attorney brought it when you prosecute.
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mason.
Aye. What did the Court of Appeals do that?
Still don't understand how that affirmative defense of number 2A applies in view of the amendments of 1B.
Okay. you could have a situation where, say, you have a 16-year-old boy who subjects another person to sexual contact, a 15-year-old girl, okay, or they're driving, and they're making out. Okay, the victim is incapable of consenting because she's under 18 years of age. Okay, the difference between their ages is only 1 year. He's 16 and she's 15. Technically, he's committed the crime under the bill because she's under 18 years of age and she cannot legally consent. Yet he would have an affirmative defense under sub 2 because the only reason she could not consent was because she was not old enough and that she was more than 14 years of age, she's 15,
and
the difference between their ages is only 1 year instead of less than 4. So he'd have an affirmative defense in that case.
So all three of these must be shown to have to have any affirmative defense.
Right? That's correct. They're all.
All three. They're all in the conjunctive.
Right, with an
and.
Yeah,
and.
Yeah.
Well, I think the affirmative defense that you're talking about may be getting into a very, very unusual area of the law because I'm very briefly read the Court of Appeals decision in this case, Davis versus Landino. Their interpretation is that the element of 18 years of age is already in the statute. And the way they get in the statute is by reading another statute, ORS 163315, which says a minor is incapable of giving consent under 18 years of age. So they take another statute and plug in the 18-year business here. That's the way they do it. And then they quote the commentary to the criminal code and a few other things and say that the 18 years is to be read in there. However, I would think that our action in passing this bill would be a statement that it wasn't in there originally. Because if I know my statutory interpretation right, but if it isn't in there, you can't read it in there, and it's always tenuous to try to read something in the statute. The courts do it. However, if we indeed do pass this amendment, we would be indeed saying that it wasn't in there originally. So I think we should leave well enough alone.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
Well, I'm not sure that you have to have that construction, particularly if the committee record is clear enough on the point. And the very first point that was made was that we're receiving demurrers to accusatory instruments on the grounds that they're having to use two statutes and as prosecutors failing to perhaps cite both of the appropriate provisions as the court has apparently said is necessary. And I think that our purpose here is to facilitate the pleading process and not to change the law in any way. And that would be the intent that I would have if I voted on this measure.
Yeah, I don't see what the big deal is.
It's a very technical point.
You might have a better argument about not voting for the bill on the basis that it's not necessarily needed, and it's just housekeeping. But certainly if we can give some direction to prosecutors out in the field and make their life a little easier for them as far as not making their accusatory instruments subject to murders, and I think that's probably worth maybe at least part of the time we've spent on the bill so far.
Is there a motion on the bill?
Representative Smith moves that House Bill 2559 as amended be sent to the floor for due pass recommendations. Is there a discussion?
I think it belongs on the consent calendar.
I don't know if we've got 5 votes to get it out of committee, but we'll see. To be placed on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chairman, I'll vote for the bill, but I will not vote to put on the consent calendar.
Okay. Just to send it to the floor for due pass, then. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Cohen?
Aye.
Dugan?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Okay, let's take up House Bill 2438.
Tim Bugis, you had something that you wanted to raise at the point?
Joan's going to hand some material out. Yes?
These are fiscal impact statements. The one-page one was done by Mental Health Division and a website of fiscal office. The two-page one came from the county. There is some discrepancy, but I've given up trying to understand it. So.
Review where we are with the bill. All the amendments. The bill was ready until today. The bill was ready for some kind of final vote. The question before the committee was the fiscal impact, whether the bill should be sent to Ways and Means or sent to the floor. Now, as I understand it, if you look at either one of these fiscal impacts, the major impact on both these statements from Multnomah County and from State Mental Health Division comes from the 14-day hold provision. In the Mental Health Division statement, that's $319,000 additional to the county. In the Multnomah County one, it's either $550,000 or $825,000, depending on how many people you estimate will be held for the full 14 days. So, I understand that someone will propose an amendment to delete the 14-day hold provision. The other thing, the discrepancy in the two fiscal impact statements comes with the change of the definition and the change of the standard of proof. But that, the change of definition, basically, rather than the standard of proof, is the other thing that gives the bill any fiscal impact at all. $312,000 Multnomah County estimates, whereas the Mental Health Division estimates $70,000. This is all to the county. There are fiscal people here from Mental Health and from Multnomah County if you want explanations of these discrepancies. But taking out the 14-day thing would get rid of a major part of the cost on anybody's estimate. Changing the definition would get rid of the rest of the cost if you want to go that way. Donna seems to have left.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hughes.
I've been talking to Representative Zeton. I don't know if she went either. I thought she was waiting for us. But
she went back to her office.
And on page 3 of the amendments dated dated LC 2627-31679. Working from those, on the bottom of page 3, I would propose to amend the bill by completely deleting all the underlying material. Put a period after the word council. Now that is precisely for the reason to eliminate the unusual cost that would be visited upon the counties, which would have to hold the person. And it meets the objection of Representative Lombard, who's come here.
Okay. That would also, taking in that, I'm also including that you're going to restore the OR in that line.
Requested by him.
Period.
Yes, that's the recommendation of I think that's the one we need for to keep Representative Lombard happy and restore the OR.
Okay. Motion is by this is the bill before us, President. The motion is by Representative Bugis. On page 3 of the bill, line 23, after the word council, place a period, delete the rest of the page. And then on line 23, restore the OR that's bracketed and delete the comma. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Okay, hearing none, so ordered.
Then Mr. Chairman, trying again to make the bill acceptable to some people who have found a problem. If you will look, turn to page 4 of those same amendments, as LC amendments, and then take judicial conference amendments that furnished us by Judge Beatty, dated April 6th. And on a page there that is page 4, but at least in my copy is unnumbered. See, there's actually two sets of amendments he stuck together, he taped together there. So it'd be the fourth page in your packet.
I don't have that.
That's Judicial Conference?
Yes, it's entitled Judicial Conference, April 6, 1979, proposed amendments to H.B. 2438. Now, we have already adopted amendments down to where it says delete lines, so forth. You see that?
Which delete?
It's down in the middle. It's an indented. There's an indented couple of lines. And it says delete lines 13 to 18.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
That's been adopted.
Okay, have these all been adopted?
Yeah.
The third one has not, I only have one page of the judicial conference left because that was all that was adopted. I think the other page was on the medical record.
Well, now, let me talk about this a minute. Have we adopted that about the report? This is the one that, so we're talking the same language.
So we've adopted the amendment about the investigative report.
Did we delete in there the one sentence that says the report itself,
yes,
shall be made a part of the record?
Yes.
Okay.
And inserted up on the second line of that amendment, so the first couple of lines read, a copy of the investigative report shall be provided as soon as possible,
but in no
but
case
in no
later
event
than
less than 24 hours.
Okay.
Prior to the
hearing. All right. Now, is there one other one that you had, Joan? That's the only other one I had.
No, all I was suggesting was that if you want to reduce the fiscal impact to virtually zero, you take out the 14-day hold and restore the definition to the current definition. But as it is, taking out the 14-day hold, you will reduce the cost either to $70,000, $650,000, according to Mental Health Division's estimate. This is the cost to the county. Have the cost to the state be $176,000 and have federal money be $81,500. So a total cost of around $300,000 plus. Under Multnomah County's estimate, the cost to Multnomah County alone would be $312,000 now with what you've done, taking out the 14-day hold but leaving the definition as it is.
Well, there's this balance sheet that I see, from the mental health division balance sheet, there's a minus $42,456 for decreased commitment hearings.
That's under the
14 days.
Under the 14 days. The subsection 1 of that balance sheet is the cost for the new definition and lowering the standard of proof. Most of that coming from the new definition. So the subtotals are $70,000, $176,000, $81,000 approximately. Number 2 is the increased 14-day hold, and that's now all out under Representative Bevis' amendment.
Well, bill still has fiscal impact, and
I'd like to make a statement about
Mr.
Stern,
mental health.
Want to come up? I'll second, sir.
On the fiscal impact statement.
I'm Tom Stern, a mental health specialist with the Mental Health Division. I just want to place something before you. The Multnomah County fiscal impact, which I did not do and I know nothing about, but as I read it, I see the added cost being $37,000 instead of the $312,000 that you're speaking of. That's just the way I read this document, and I'm not intending to say that I know what the intent of Multnomah County was. So I think you'd be comparing that Mental Health Division estimate of $70,000 for the whole state with the Multnomah County estimate of $37,000. That's all I had to say.
Okay, then that probably, then the cost you would be looking at is subtotal under number one, $70,000 to the county, $176,000 to the state, and $81,000 extra federal money.
Mr. Chairman,
my Multnomah County people, I've got and a constituent also.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Becky Belanger with Multnomah County's Office of Intergovernmental Relations. I prepared the memo that is before you this afternoon, and I'd like to concur with our mental health people. Currently, or over the past year, we detained 1,018 people on emergency hold basis. What we're looking at in the change of definition, and it's an estimate at best, is probably about a 15% increase, which would result in an additional $37,000 rather than a total of $312,000. $312,000 would be the total cost of the program. $275,000 of that is what we were already incurring. So I just wanted to clarify that for you.
The fiscal impact in Multnomah County is $37,000.
With definition, Ms. Robinson was correct in stating that the significant portion of the fiscal impact realized by Multnomah County was in the 14-day provision. We are comfortable with the change of definition and would support the bill with current definition, even though it will have an impact of approximately $37,000. There's no way that we can anticipate the increased number of position and police holds, but given our experience, we would estimate a 15% increase.
Okay. Well, there's still $176,000 worth of fiscal impact to the state, as I read the bill. And that's, at least in my mind, a significant fiscal impact.
Plus, I guess number three also is still an additional investigative staff time at hearings to answer questions from the examiners.
It's about $200,000 to the state.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I was trying to find the fiscal impact statement. As you know, there's been...
I think they're fresh this morning.
There's been so many.
Chairman, I wonder if this has been a legislative rule and maybe made some manual and other things that we just, on our own stationery, started putting fiscal impact statements at the top, wrote out what we think it's going to cost, and we could all work off those.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I should say, in defense of the fiscal office, that after I was asked to figure out, to try to get revised fiscal impact statements, that the people in the fiscal office did work with the mental health division and came up with this, and it's not the mechanic thing, I was misreading, so to some extent that's my fault. I granted probably the assumptions that, certainly the assumptions that the first fiscal impact statement that we got, the $1.6 million one, as I understand it, were based on guesswork. This is a more, according to the legislative fiscal people, this is a more accurate estimate, but still an estimate. But I do think, I mean, the fiscal staff did respond to my request for revision and based on the way the bill was reading it when it was finally worked out here.
I guess Donna Zager on District 32, the way I respond, Mr. Chairman, is that, first of all, there has been a lot of work on the fiscal impact statement. The problems is, the problem with devising a fiscal impact statement is that you're making assumptions, and anyone that makes an assumption, I certainly could disagree with that assumption, and so it'll be hard for this committee to get a good fiscal impact. Some of the things that you're reading that's in front of you are under the state's column. That is a statewide, and each county will not necessarily have a tremendous impact, and so therefore could absorb it. I do believe that there may be one county that, because of their size, Multnomah County, does have more possibility of going over to a point where they might need new staff. I worked with Becky Belanger about this, and she agreed, and I agreed that if the 14-day was the biggest concern, that we'd take that out. And you know, that's the county with the supposedly largest fiscal impact can live with everything but the 14 days. So part of compromise I gave. The other thing is that I want to point out to the committee again that the Mental Health Division's budget is not up in front of Ways and Means. To really adequately review this bill, it needs to be with the rest of the committee, with the rest of the budget. As you all know, the session's going late, and to send it now to Ways and Means, I think, would be possibly inappropriate because they don't even have the budget yet. And I would appreciate the committee moving it out. Can go past the floor and in the Senate side, it would be appropriate timing if they're still concerned about the fiscal impact to review it in Ways and Means at that time, because then they would be looking at the mental health budget.
Well, there's no guarantee that it would be sent to Ways and Means on the Senate side for a sensation. I guess, has the mental health budget been heard in
No, it has not, and that's what I'm saying. Haven't done any work on the Senate side, and to hold up the bill and not move it over to the Senate side, the timing would be, you know, very difficult. And that it could be, if there is that significant a concern, and I think from the original fiscal impact statement, you know, we've come quite a ways in really looking hard at what the impact is going to be.
Well, if the bill costs $250,000 to the state, you would, I'm sure, take the position that it's something Ways and Means should look at as far as, in view of the other priorities that it has, as far as parceling out money, whether or not it's good public policy or not.
Well, I would agree. First of all, though, I would not agree that it has $250,000 fiscal impact.
Excuse me.
Representative Cohen.
Well, but according to this sheet, it says $70,000 for the county, and then it does say state, $176,000, and that is the state as compared with $70,000 to the counties, and that fits pretty well with what Multnomah County said, because they said they have the biggest share of those problems, and their assessment is $37,000, which means about a little over half, or right around half, a little over of the $70,000 cost to the county. So the 176 really, as I read it here, it's still a cost to the state.
Okay.
And I'm getting some head shaking in the back, and so that what we really are looking at a $176,000. If we're assuming this is correct, and the interesting thing to me was that we come up Multnomah County after we boil it all down, does jive pretty well with the $70,000 assessment from the mental health and the $37,000 from the county. So as an independent check, if indeed it was independent, I'd say we're pretty much on track. Then I got to give a little more credence to the 176.
Yeah, you have a additional investigator staff time, 48,000 for the state. Well, I'm in a very difficult position, Representative Sejon, because I support the bill, and I'm willing to vote in favor of it, but I have great trepidation sending it out before with this kind of a price tag on it and attempting to bypass, at least on the House side, the Ways and Means Committee. You know, we have routinely sent things down to Ways and Means. In fact, one of my bills got tabled in this committee. It had less of a fiscal impact than this did, which I thought was good public policy. It had to do with alcohol information school, you know, because of the fiscal impact. And I think the least that if this committee is going to do, I think we've got to send it to Ways and Means. I'm sorry about that, and I'm sorry it's late in the session.
Well, that's true. It is very late in the session.
Let Representative
go. Sure, go ahead.
You've got the floor. Representative.
Well, again, I guess I was just going to say, in terms of timing, if the majority of the committee does support the bill, then because of the timing of the session, would hope that might be reviewed on the Senate side. Of course, there's no guarantee that it wouldn't be sent from the floor to Ways and Means if that would be the will of the majority of the body. But I think to send it to Ways and Means now and wait through the budget, it'll take probably at least 3 weeks to get through mental health budget, and we're not even into it yet, and then to have adequate hearings on the Senate side, it would
be. Is there such a motion,
Representative
Hughes? Mr. Chairman, or maybe we could do it by a letter. I would be willing to try to send it out and get it by the House, but I think we ought to flag it in the Senate, at least maybe a letter to the Senate recommending that they would send it to us.
Representative Cohen?
Well, I just I think there's a choice to be made here, and that's to remove the definition, the changing definition, the front one, and go straight to that, go straight through with it. Legitimately, all of us have bills in Ways and Means, and some of us have had Ways and Means bills sent from 2 months ago that are still in Ways and Means, and we're all in that bag, and I just don't see that that's as much of a crisis as she said, as Representative Zajon said, because, you know, we all have bills that have come out of committees in the last 2 months, whether they came out in January or they came out now, they've been a committee report on the floor of the House, and they're all down there waiting in the same place at the same time. And with my reservations about the mental, I guess my vote to get it out of this committee, with the first definition in there and the change, including, the first definition would have to be to go to Ways and Means, just because I think it's what we
Mr. Chair, is the biggest problem fiscally, the remaining fiscal problem, the definition?
I don't know.
Including medical needs, don't, is that?
From the way I read the fiscal impact statement, the rest of the cost comes from the combination of the definition and lowering of the standard of proof, and I think Mr. Stern told me that it was mostly, or perhaps you told me, that it was mostly the definition rather than the lowering of the standard of proof. Mr. Stern.
He's nodding. Either going to sleep or I think he's nodding yes.
If that is the problem, then I'd be willing to give on the definition.
Yeah, you just want to go with the standard.
Yes.
I think it's probably a valid point, Donna.
That's why I'm willing to give. I agree.
I hate to see it go because I think you lose quite a bit. But.
Okay. Representative Bugis moves on page one of the bill that we return to the present law, present language, and delete the material that deals with the definition of mentally ill person, that is new language. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Will that leave some fiscal impact? $100 worth, $1,000 worth?
I think that it will.
Which in any event is going to send it to Ways and Means, and that's why I'm going to oppose the motion. I think it's going to end up in Ways and Means either way.
I think maybe, Donna, that
I'd hate to see you gut the bill for something you aren't going
to
get.
Yeah, it's kind of a bad way to do business, because if this is really the policy decision the state should take, then we should all go down the Ways and Means and fight for it to get it funded and really approach it that way. And I'll be glad to talk to Representatives Gilmore and Ripper, Co-Chairman Ripper, to see if we can get this funded, because I think it's an important piece of legislation. Probably more important than a lot of other things we sent down to Ways.
Well, one of the problems in funding it, and you know, it's kind of a late hour to bring this up, but you are operating on assumptions, and it's very, very difficult to fund something that you're expecting to increase. It may not increase, and it may other things may occur that the overall impact is decreased. We're talking on unexpected increases. And to fund money, I don't believe Ways and Means would fund that. I don't think as a policymaker I would, because you don't know that it's going to happen. That's not the budgetary cycle of this state.
Sure. Representative Mason.
Donna knows that I opposed the bill, and I'm not pleased that this definition is coming out if it doesn't need to come out, which I object to. But I also told her, and I quite unequivocally, that I would not vote to send it to Ways and Means, because I think what we're dealing here is a structural problem with this process, and that is that because of the idea of fiscal impact as opposed to actual appropriation, one committee turns into a bottleneck for this whole process, and rightly or wrongly, any time a fiscal impact is implied, it takes away all the leeway, and I for one, and very, very loath to see that go on and on and on.
if indeed everything we do here has a theoretical physical impact, or fiscal impact, although we don't get fiscal impact statements that say it every time, but Representative Zajon's point about these are assumptions that are operating on are extremely well taken. Nobody knows how much this bill is going to cost because nobody knows how it's going to be implemented. And there may be zero fiscal impact here. And that's what we're talking about. So I don't want to see her have to pull out, which is something which is the essence of the bill, which I oppose. But, you know, I don't want to see someone whipsaw between here and that committee.
Well,
I mean, I'll vote to take this out if that's what you want. But
okay, the motion, is there further discussion?
Well, I'd like to, since Representative Lee Johnson is the primary sponsor, which would you rather do? I likewise would personally contact the members of Ways and Means, you know, that I'm close to asking them to look favorably on this, but I just think the machinery is going to bog it down there.
Well, I
think the machinery in Ways and Means, if it goes to Ways and Means, kills the bill.
Representative Cohen.
Representative Bugis, if we, those of us who have bills and Ways and Means, if we believe, I mean, there's no way that Ways and Means act on anything until they're done with their budgets when they talk about these kinds of things or if they incorporate them into the budget. It just seems to me that sooner you're going to be, I don't know what you gain. If it's incorporated in the budget, then you're not going to have a hassle on the floor with it.
Further discussion.
My point is that you can't incorporate something that you don't know in fact is occurring. It's just not the way the state works.
But then you're not. Then
that's why we have an emergency board. As much as I don't like it, but that's why we have an emergency board.
But I think that. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that I'd rather see the definition stay in there and go down and work for it.
Okay. So further discussion. The motion is to delete the new language that deals with the definition of mentally ill person on page 1 of the bill. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Now this is to strike it.
Strike it.
Aye.
Cohen. Mason.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Gardner.
No. Passes.
Chairman
fails.
Need a chairman's vote.
Okay. I'm not going to vote to strike. Is there a motion on the bills that's presently before us?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take a vote on this one. Representative Rutherford comes back.
Would someone get Representative Rutherford in the back room? Give it a try.
You have to have 5 no matter what. 5 votes.
That's got a majority of the full committee.
Oh, what an awful thing.
What's the next motion?
I assume it's going to be the same motion we just voted upon.
And then the next motion is going to be to send it to Ways and Means.
I assume that someone will make a motion to send it to the floor. But then again, I'm making assumptions. Is there a motion on the bill that's presently before us?
Move. No, did we take it out?
No, we didn't take it out.
Move to take out the definition, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Bugis moves on page 1 of the bill to strike the language, the new language dealing with mentally ill person in the definition and restore the language that's presently law. Is there discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
No. Passes. So we vote on the bill as it's presently before us.
Mr. This bill is forced to pass as amended.
Representative Bugis moves that House...
No,
just
eliminate it.
We cut about two-thirds of the fiscal impact, but it's still probably going to cost something.
We took that to 14 days?
Yeah.
We took that out.
Out.
The only thing the bill does now, well, there's a couple of things, but the main...
I had a couple of questions on the bill.
Representative Rutherford?
What is the status of the language on page 4 regarding the report that's made available for the examiner?
No, that's...
The committee adopted the Fourth Amendment's judicial conference.
All right. And the medical record of treatment, what's the status of that?
That is the language that's in the proposed draft of the bill. I'm sorry, with the addition that the record will be made available to the allegedly mentally ill person's counsel at least 24 hours prior to the hearing.
That was a judicial conference.
That, either that or the committee just thought of it on its own track with the investigative report line.
So those are in. And the other matter is the clear and convincing evidence, right?
That's in, right.
Okay, the motion is by Representative Bugis to send House Bill 2438 as amended for the printed gross. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I would only suggest that if, by reason of some perceived fiscal impact on the floor of the House, if there's a motion to send us to Ways and Means, that we resist that motion and ask for the bill to come back here before it goes to Ways and Means. And that's a comment, not...
I'll give you a preview of what I think is going to happen. I think there's going to be a four fight on the bill. I think that you basically, I'm supporting the bill. I support the bill with the 14 days. I support the bill with the new language as far as definition of mentally ill person. But what I think is going to happen is I think that's just one more lever that's going to basically end up in the defeat of the bill. And the proper procedure would have been to send it to Ways and Means, have them consider it, and send it out. I think it could have been gotten out of Ways and Means. Okay. But that's not the decision of the committee, so we'll go forward at this point. Motion is by Representative Bugis to send House Bill 2438 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation to be printed and engrossed. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
No.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Is that 4-1?
Yes.
Aye. Passes.
I certainly appreciate the agony all of you've gone through. Really do.
$21.98.
We've got a long-awaited redraft from Bob Lundy here. It's the work product of the subcommittee.
This is a final draft?
This is a final draft.
Of the subcommittee.
And got a couple of opening remarks on it. Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's been ready for a long time.
Okay. As you can see on the second page of the bill sets some new dollar figures. If you can remember back to when we first did this bill, we focused on the fact that there's a statutory fee schedule in force throughout the state that actually is being followed in some cases, and in most cases the counties have set their own fee schedules. And where we started on this was hearing the representatives of the bar and other related interested people criticizing the existence of a statutory fee schedule that was nothing but a sham. The subcommittee, in negotiation and debate with members of the public, the bar, the county, defense bar, and any number of other interested people, came up with some dollar figures to replace the statutory fee schedule. Those dollar figures are $40 per hour for time in court, and $30 per hour for time out of court, preparation time, or any other legal service time spent out of court. The subcommittee also took the position that it would be good for once to tie together all the statutes that involve payment for counsel for indigent defendants, or indigents, whether or not they're defendants, if they face the possibility of confinement as a result of court action. That includes juveniles, people who have mental problems leading to civil commitment, includes habeas corpus, mental deficiency, appeals from the Psychiatric Security Review Board, and in fact, appearances before the Psychiatric Security Review Board after a finding of not guilty by reason of insanity. The whole thing. And that's why this bill's so thick, because it includes proper mandatory language to tie together all those sections. Now there's, as I mentioned at the beginning of this work session, there's a real fight on the dollar figures, because the counties, especially Multnomah County, has come in with a fiscal analysis which would lead you to think that this bill would be extremely costly with the dollar figures that are presently included. Regardless of that, I think it's important to keep in mind that the rest of the bill, after the setting of the dollar figure, or even, let's say, leaving the fee schedule as it is, that was open, that was criticized on the first time the bill was ever heard, totally apart from that, the rest of the bill, all the work that Bob Lundy did, tying all these other statutory sections together, making uniform and making them work, and in some instances coming up with new statutory sections, it's two separate things, and it's important to at least keep in mind the value of the second major part of the bill. There were amendments that were proposed, or at least that were put forward by the county to change on page 2 of the bill the language not less than $40 an hour and not less than $30 an hour to spread across the board 40 and 30. Or maybe that's not it. In any case, there was debate on that. Jerry Orrick had some proposed amendments that would bring it down. I think I just misstated it, but the point is that there's a question about that. But the larger question is the fiscal impact generally.
This does have a subsequent referral?
It doesn't now, but the subcommittee recommended that it be referred to Ways and Means and let Ways and Means work it out.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Rutherford.
I remember when this bill first came up for hearing, and we spent a great deal of time even that day, controversy between the trial bar and the counties. That's where the subcommittee came from. Looks to me like they've done a fantastic job. I frankly never expected that they'd be able to cut through the Gordian knot on this thing. I see if they've come as far as the indications they must have done a heck of a job.
Had a lot of help from Bob Lundy, but we did have two work sessions, two public work sessions, and we met individually with interested parties, and I think there's at least something here to send to Ways and Means if the full committee so desires.
Now, can I throw in one more idea? If the bill gets lost, let's say down like Ways and Means, or they fight it to death, I think we would want to keep open the possibility of taking one of the two bills off the table that we tabled today to pull out the last, whatever it is, 20 pages of the bill, and send them through, at least conforming all the statutory sections that relate to the payment for indigent defense lawyers. And even if, let's say, if no bill went through and we stuck with a statutory fee schedule of $25 on a guilty plea for misdemeanor, et cetera, if it's okay with this committee, I'd like to take upon myself the responsibility of making sure that if Ways and Means doesn't discharge the bill to the floor, that we bring that back before you. So as not to lose all of Bob Lundy's work.
I don't know what kind of an expression you need on that, Mr. Chairman, but I would agree.
Okay. Do you want to run us through the major provisions of the bill?
Sure.
Very quickly.
Okay, page...
Excuse me, before you start, Mr. Chairman. Do members of the audience who might need a copy of this have a copy?
Probably some of them do, maybe not all of them. I have some extra copies here from anybody wants to come up and take them. I'll lay them out on the table.
Yeah.
Okay. On page one of the bill, the draft, the First Amendment on line 11 and 12, lines 11 and 12 is housekeeping. Throughout the bill, you see a lot of wording changes. Those are almost always Bob Lundy's attempt to make the statutes uniform and more precise, so that the same that kind of housekeeping language changes on lines 14 through 16. The deletion of the present fee schedule is on 16 through 26, and on page 2 down to line 7. Then you get the meat of the controversial part of the bill on line 8 and following. I'll read that. Subject to subsection 3 of this section, compensation payable to appointed counsel under subsection 1 of this section shall not be less than $40 an hour for time spent in court and $30 an hour for time spent out of court. That's the substantive recommendation of the subcommittee. And then there's caps on the total compensation. $2,000 for a felony, $1,000 for a misdemeanor, and $1,000 in any other proceeding, which might include civil commitment, juvenile, habeas corpus, whatever. And then, of course, the subcommittee kept the power of the judge to make payment over and above the limit in extraordinary circumstances. Of course, you remember that the testimony now is that everything's extraordinary because the fee schedule is so low. Bob uses the term expenses to include everything other than attorney's fees. And he starts using that terminology on line 24. Page 3. Down to line 16 is language changes, which are housekeeping. After line 16 is a new provision that essentially Bob Lundy and I dreamed up. I'll read it to you. Upon the completion of all services by the counsel appointed pursuant to these sections, the court shall determine whether the person for whom counsel was appointed is able to pay a portion of the compensation and expenses paid by the county. In determining whether the person is able to pay such portion, the court shall take into account the other financial obligations of the person, including any fine or order to make restitution. And if the court determines the person is able to pay such portion, the court may order the person to pay the portion to the appropriate officer of the county. So the situation is if the defendant or other indigent person has some money and the court finds that that person can afford to repay the county for some of the money that the county put out for that person's defense. Now that's not in the statute at this time. That's new.
Chairman, I'll share my only concern with that provision, and I'm certain that the mechanics can be worked out, but typically the way payment is made, as you know, is by a voucher system, and that the judge pretty much has a routine function in setting the amount of fees. Unless some additional information is taken at the close of a case, in the way of an affidavit relating to the assets of the indigent defendant, I don't see how the judge is going to know any more at the end of the case than he did at the time that he appointed indigent counsel. So I very much approve of the philosophy of that provision. I'd like to see it stay in, but it leaves it up, I think, to the counties to figure out how they're going to get the information to the judge.
Well, the thought that Bob Lundy and I had was that that's an appropriate function for the county, and they could work it out. We don't know that they could, but...
There could simply be a sworn verification at the end of the case that my assets have not significantly changed since the case started, and it's signed by that individual, and counsel signs off and says, I know of no significant change, or yes, the inheritance came through that was anticipated, and the person may be in a better position to pay.
In most cases, the person would not be in substantially better position after a trial, after his employment may have been disrupted and everything else, but it's a philosophical point.
Yeah. But I think it's a good addition.
Page 4 relates to just the beginning of the long list of sections that just tie this whole thing together. This is for post-conviction appeal, I believe. Is it for post-conviction relief?
We're looking at section 3 now.
Section 2 of the bill on page 4. Bob put this in himself, but in general, one of these is post-conviction relief, another is post-conviction appeal, and it's just tying them together. Like, all right, the first one is post-conviction relief, the next one is appeal. Paging over through page 6, page 7.
Mr. Chairman, a drafting question for Dennis. Dennis, would it be appropriate, I was having the same problem working with the bill, to use the ORS cross-references. Would it be a facilitator to lay in the language of what those sections are?
No. No. Not for purposes of using the statute, I don't think so.
So that a person could quickly locate if they were thumbing through the statutes, okay, how much do we have to pay to an attorney under post-conviction relief? Where is that section? And they could recognize it. I suppose it'll be...
I'm convinced that the way Bob did it is technically the best way to do it.
Okay. I just had trouble working through it without the buzzword, and I had to look at the statute each time to find out which one was which.
To give you an example of what Bob did, on page 4, lines 12 and 13, he refers to compensation, that means attorney's fees, determined as provided in ORS 135.055. Okay? 135.055 is the section that we started with. You're going to see that repeated again and again and again. Now, as I said, I was paging through to page 7.
I think we skipped over one thing, if I may ask, Mr. Chairman.
For instance,
throughout this, we have maintained the notion that counsel possessing skills and experience suitable for the case in every one of these instances.
Yeah.
And that was a previous decision of the full committee, I believe, or the full subcommittee. And that now is a condition of the appointment and payment throughout.
Okay. Again, the one on page 7, 138.590 is one of the forms of post-conviction relief and appeal.
Okay.
Six over page 8, page 9. On page 9, you see on line 20, the court shall determine and allow as provided in 135.055 the amount of the expenses and compensation. On page 10. Okay, 10 starts 3016, which is the bill on the Psychiatric Security Review Board. You may remember that we pulled any language about payment for the attorneys who will appear either before the Psychiatric Security Review Board or on appeal before the Court of Appeals, on appeals from that board. We pulled that out of 3016, so we keep 3016 out of the Ways and Means Committee. Now it's plugged in here. And page 11, page 12, at the bottom of 12 you get the payment for compensation and expenses in the manner provided in 138.500. Same thing on page 13 at the top. The section 6 on page 13 is another Psychiatric Security Review Board section providing for payment. And the provision for payment is... Now that's on page 16. The authorization to appoint counsel is stated. On page 17, you start with more Psychiatric Security Review Boards. It takes you over to page 19, where you see the new language providing for expenses and compensation to be paid. I'll note that here, as throughout the bill, payment is made by the county from which the indigent person originated. On page 20, line 12 is the beginning of the cross-reference to the juvenile appeal section. Is it appeal? I think it's juvenile below. Yeah, that's the trial level.
It is.
And then on page 22, you get the appeal, I believe. No, that's simply payment. That's 419,563 is payment. No, that is appeal, right. So page 22 is juvenile appeal, same format. Page 23 is the beginning of civil commitment, provisions for appeal, and provisions for payment. And page 24 and 25 is appeal from civil commitment, provision for payment. It also is the beginning of provision for payment from the court determination of, or in a court determination of mental deficiency. Page 26 is appeal of a court determination of mental deficiency and provision of payment for it. Page 27 is the provision of payment in habeas corpus cases. The question there was whether it would be all people who want to bring a petition for habeas corpus or some smaller subset of people, because I think you could find it, everybody at the prison spending nothing during all their time during the day doing nothing but filing these petitions. The subcommittee restricted that to say, if counsel is appointed, and it's silent as to when counsel shall be appointed, let the court decide when to appoint counsel, but if counsel is appointed, then that counsel is paid according to the provisions of the bill. Then there's on line 21 of the last page, an effective date, and that's left blank.
Okay. Really, the only, I guess, issue that I can see is on page 2 of the bill, the only substantive issue.
Well, there is a little bit of expansion of the kinds of cases that the county has to pay for throughout the rest of the bill. They don't, the statutes don't say uniformly that the county pays. And of course, as we've heard, there are some situations in which the statutes don't say anything about who pays, and so nobody pays. And that's an issue, but it's a smaller issue. Because in most of those cases, there aren't that many cases compared to the number of criminal cases.
Okay. Let's get the ball rolling. Chair would move adoption of the proposed amendments to House Bill 2198, titled Legislative Council 5479, Sub 3434, House Bill 2198. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Brock?
So this bill wouldn't be on the table.
Yeah. It's table.
It is table. Okay, the chair would then move that House Bill 2198 be taken off the table. Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Dugan?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Passes. Chair would then move that House Bill 2198 be amended per the Legislative Council amendments dated 5479, House Bill 2198. Is there discussion?
Do we want to put an effective date in?
Well, I think that there are probably some motions regarding the amounts of money as far as the, so much per hour and everything else. And I'm just making the motion basically to get the thing before us so that we can play with it. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Okay, are the motions on the bill as it's before us? Representative Smith?
Before I make a motion, I'd like to inquire, what would the appropriate motion be to do pass with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
The motion, once we take care of all the other amended motions, would be to send the bill to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Well, I'm inclined to make that motion.
Well, there is the question of the effective date of the act. Representative Rutherford?
I didn't have any date in mind. I just wondered what the if there was any thought given to that date, what the appropriate date would be. I myself don't have a preconceived opinion.
That may be somehow tied in with the degree of funding that Ways and Means give indigent defense during the next
buy-in in.
Was the subcommittee's notion to leave that blank for the
Ways for Ways and Means, I think, was our discussion. Let Ways and Means put the date in.
Mason.
We did have the two other indigent defense bills already down in 2002.
That's right.
And 2761, both of which are down there, and I can see, the three go together. They're going to have to be reconciled, so I really don't think we need to put a date in there, because the date, if anything, then it'll be the same date for all three and the same date for one, so I...
Is there further discussion? Okay. Is there further amendments to the bill? Okay, Representative Smith moves that House Bill 2198 as amended be sent to the Ways and Means Committee to do pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Needs to be printed in gross.
Yeah, printed in gross. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dugas?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Is there further business to come before the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I would just again observe, it seems to me that the subcommittee should have the thanks of the full committee, because I'm sure they saved us plenty of time.
Certainly have the chairman's thanks, and I'm sure the rest of the committee and it would be commended.
No, Dennis and Bob Lundy really helped speed along tremendously.
There's one question I have. I spoke with Ed Casey this morning about sending a letter to Ways and Means explaining what we mean by all this, explaining, for instance, that we expect that the funding would have to be worked out. Do I have a sense of the committee as to, let's say, that the bill shouldn't go anywhere unless the state picks up the whole cost, or that the county should pay part of it, or what? Do we have any recommendation along those lines? Because the information we got was that you can't pay for everything, you can't do 2002 and this and the...
Why don't you and I work on a letter and we will bring that back before the committee.
Okay.
And at that point in time, the committee can either adopt it or reject it.
Okay.
Is there further business to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.